Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Radar, the podcast that takes you into the world of Safran and looks at all the issues that affect the group on a daily basis. In this new issue, we're going to talk about ejection, quite literally, because today's guest is the 499th French pilot to have to eject himself from his aircraft. So fasten your seatbelts and don't forget your parachute, because you're about to hear a firsthand account of the moments before and after that life-saving decision. It is my pleasure to be here with Max Mutusami, former fighter pilot, business developer, and flight operations expert at Safran Aircraft Engines. Welcome to the podcast, Max.
Well, thank you, Kara, for inviting me for this.
So, Max, to set the stage, let's quickly introduce you to our listeners. You were born in 1965 in Martinique, and you always dreamed of being a pilot. Your first dream was actually to become an airline pilot, but you ended up joining the French Air Force in 1985. At age 20, you then became a fighter pilot. You joined Safran Aircraft Engines in 2001 and continued to fly for the military until 2015. And during these nearly 30 years in the air, there's one day in particular that you will never forget, March 14th, 1991. It's a Thursday. You left on a low-level training mission with another aircraft, a very ordinary mission, an ordinary day for you. Can you tell us about that day?
Yes. As you say, this is an ordinary day, beautiful weather. I was student pilot, so I had 30 flight hours done on this airplane, the Jaguar, and that was a normal day. With another airplane, and as I was studying, so I had a leader with me to give me all the training I need for that. So this guy was the deputy of the flight safety in the French Air Force. So we start the day basically preparing the mission, and I go to the airplane, and I sit down in my mind having the ritual for strap up my body on the seat, and taking care of my map. I had to follow the navigation all along the mission, put that on the left side of the cockpit, and paying attention of the safety pin that the engineers will show me. That is the different pins of the different safety lockers of the seats. And so the day start like this. I line up behind my leader, so we taxi like this up to the holding point, and I have to take off 7 seconds behind. So the leader release the brakes, and I release my brakes 7 seconds behind. When we took off, I saw this kind of a black smoke behind his airplane, so it means that he shut down the post-combustion, this extra power we put on the airplane for takeoff, for combat as well. So I joined his airplane in a kind of a fighting wing position. It's a position that you have to maintain behind your leader in a cone of 150 meters behind. And that give you possibility to have better maneuvers behind the airplane, and also to have a good position to watch the sky in order to see other airplanes or other hazard coming up. So we are like this, and took off from Saint-Dizier, and start off our low-level navigation, heading south at 500 feet and 420, 450 knots. So during the navigation, I had to anyway have a look on my maps too, because you don't know at any time that I can need your help. I mean, you can face a problem, or you can just tell me, okay, Max, you take the lead. So you need to be ready for that. So you pay attention of the navigation, the different points, the different aspect on the map. And you also pay attention of the sky. So watching around to see any other things arriving.
Yeah, so you take off. Everything is going as planned. Yeah. You're following your leader, waiting for potential instructions for him. Mm. And then you actually come across some birds.
Yeah.
Is that pretty normal?
It's normal to find birds, because actually they were there before us. In this altitude, I just need to say that bird strikes on an airplane that happened 15% between 200 and 800 feet. Below 200 feet, you have 70% of the bird strike. So we were in an area where even you still have 15% of bird strike. So we were on the track of the navigation. And during my skywatching, at the moment when I put my head in front of the airplane, I mean, I saw a lot of black points coming up on the airplane, and it's the airplane everywhere. So I understood that I had a bird strike. I start climbing to 5,000 feet. So I just transform my energy to altitude. This is a procedure, actually. So when I arrive at 5,000 feet, I announced to my leader, so I had a bird strike. He told me, okay, I come close to you. We are still in the track south. And I just have a kind of a grilled chicken smell in the cockpit and say, oh my God, you have this smell. It means that the birds went through the hot part of the engine, or like a oven, you know. Okay, I just keep that in mind. So I put one engine after one to not maximum power, but high power and low power. Everything was good. All parameters was okay. So we are still in a kind of a bird strike procedure. And this bird strike procedure requests you to climb just to be far from the ground and to divert. So we attempted diversion to Dijon, because Dijon was quietly the same distance from Saint-Dizier, but a little bit closer. The leader says, we go to Dijon. I said, oh, why we have to go to Dijon? Because actually on this Thursday, I had my vacation, you know, planned from this Thursday evening with my family for a couple of days somewhere. I don't remember where, but anyway. But I didn't have it anyway. So we tried to contact Dijon several times with no success. So maybe due to the relief, I mean, mountain or hills between them and us. So we tried different frequencies, so no response anyway. So he changed his mind. He said, okay, we don't have contact with Dijon. So what do you think that we fly back to Saint? He said, okay, fine. Perfect. So we turn left and take a heading north area, flying back to Saint-Dizier. And during this flight back to Saint-Dizier, we saw we are still 5,000 feet and flying to between, let's say 400 knots. Mm-hmm. And this is like a small voice, like an angel comes down in the cockpit and say, okay, Max, tie your seatbelt.
This is amazing because you're also following procedure. Everything's going as planned. Your engines are working.
Yeah.
You're thinking about your vacation, but you decide to tighten your straps.
It's the first time that happened to me, because I used to fly in an airplane with ejection seat, but you always have a kind of liberty, you know, in the, you are tightened, but you can a bit move on your seat. Mm-hmm. But this time I said, okay, oh, I don't know. Just block myself on the seat. And you never know. So we continue like this. But I don't want to eject anyway, because everything is fine. I'm following my leader. So we arrive close to Saint-Dizier. He calls Saint-Dizier approach. And I say, okay, we are arriving close to the airport, my number two first bird strike. So we will arrive in this position, I mean, in long final, and he will start the final. So give all the explanation to the tower in order to expect me arriving with a kind of problem, but we don't have an apparent problem anyway. And so we descend slowly to 1,000 feet. And at 1,000 feet, I had the one way in front of me at 4 nautical miles. So I decrease the speed and put the airplane in a landing configuration. I mean, flaps and gear downs, and take my speed and start descent. Everything normal, actually. And things happen at 900 feet. And at 900 feet, all I will tell you now took only 30 seconds.
Okay. 900 feet, it's not normal anymore.
No. So 900 feet, I felt something bad in the airplane. I just felt that the airplane is not flying normal. And I'm saying to my leader, I have a problem. In the same time, I saw him flying over my airplane. And in the same time, when I read the radio transcription, he's telling me ejection, ejection, but I don't hear that because we are talking the same time. So he left. And after that, he told me, I left because I saw a fire on your left engine twice the size of the airplane. So I thought that this airplane could explode. So I moved far away from your airplane. So I cannot see that. I'm in my airplane. I felt the problem and I just tried to stick to the couple of procedures that I know. And I rushed into the cockpit and tried to understand what is happening. The only thing I can feel is that the airplane is not flying normal. So I put the nose of the airplane in the ground because my speed was decreasing and I need to catch up some more speed. I'm at 900 feet. So try to get the speed. And I'm in a kind of situation that I'm in a simulator with an instructor. It is not real. I just say, okay, you will not get me today. I will succeed to recover this airplane. So I try to fight with this, trying to recover some speed, stress, but not much because I'm still have a sight on the one way and I'm just thinking that I will land in few seconds. And when I tried to recover the airplane, I had enough speed and trying to get the noise up. And the speed decreased drastically. And I still have my two engines that I put in post-combustion position from the beginning of the problems. And I tried to change a little bit the airplane configuration with the flaps and nothing happened. So I put the nose again in the ground. So I was low. I don't remember, but I don't think about that. Just say, okay, I need more speed to go to the one way. Actually, during this second attempt, I just realized that something abnormal is happening around me. It is like I moved from the fighter airplane cockpit and I was in a Airbus A320 cockpit. It's a large like this. And I was feeling very small in the cockpit and seeing the trees coming up. And I just realized at this time that, oh, you're going to die. So the only thing I had to do is to eject. Actually, this is like an automatism. I tried to grab my low under between my legs, but at the same time, I had the trees in my head and I said, no. I had to get the upper under. And because the upper under has a kind of piece of sheet that will cover your face. This is what I think, actually. I said, okay, this thing will cover my face. And in case of I am ejected through the trees, that will protect my face. So I take the upper one and I just pull it and wait. So you took 19 Gs. I was not slim as well. So 19 Gs is very, very heavy. So you can imagine that you need 2 seconds for all the system extract you from the airplane. You have a kind of sequence. You have the canopy removing and the seat ejected from the airplane with a kind of a rocket. This is why you have the 19 Gs. And after that, that lasts maybe one and a half or 2 seconds maximum. And after that, I was like a moon. With no G's in the air and face down, having everything green under me. So I just guess this is grass because this is the land. Come back in my head and said, okay, oh, wow, you have something below your legs. I mean, on the seat, because the seat, this is the life package that we have. According to the theater, you have a different package for forest, desert and so on. So anyway, we had this one for European countries. So I grabbed the string that release, you know, the packet you have under your butt and they release your leg too. So I just grabbed this strip and I tried to pull it in order to release it. And at the same time, you have in the packet a dinghy, this small boat, you know, this small boat is coming and hiding my trajectory to the ground. So I tried to remove it with my leg, but it is 2-3 meters down. So I cannot really move it, but it hit the ground because so I cannot see everything. At this time, I arrive on the ground. And actually, I said, okay, I have to stand up because maybe my leader, because I heard his airplane flying around me. And I said, okay, you have to see me, maybe stand up because otherwise you could think that I'm dying on the ground. So I said, okay, I'll make a sign.
Yeah, so all of this happens really quickly. You're, you know, going from 1 minute thinking you're battling against the simulator to the next minute saying, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And now you're on the ground. What would you say your state of mind is? Do you realize what had just happened?
Yeah, I just say, okay, what I did wrong. Because actually, when you eject it from an airplane, is something wrong from the airplane or something wrong from you? So you just ask the question to yourself, okay, what I did? But at the same time, that not lasts long because I'm trying to analyze what happened. I mean, on the ground, and I see my position, the position of the airplane. Definitely, we are on the ground. And between the airplane and myself, I had a kind of line of trees, 10, 15 meters high, burned, but not destroyed. Means that the airplane went through those trees without destroying them, but just burning them with the kerosene. Maybe I just imagine that. Look at behind me, there's a seat 100 meters behind me. So I'm just in the middle, so I just try to analyze that. And in the hand of the airplane, far, I did not know it is far or close. Actually, I could not estimate the distance. There was a farm, and I was just thinking that I hope that nothing happened to the farm. And anyway, so I was very worried, so having a look at this, and I tried to remove my G-suit, my waist, you know, to prepare me to run if needed, because I was imagining that the farmer could come to me with a gun and say, okay, what did you do to my family? And this, I mean, just imagine this is the way your brain is working when you face such an event in your life. And I was close to the word N4, the National 4, coming from Paris to east of France, with all the truck stop on the road and the cars as well. And a man arrived coming, hey, do you need some help? I said, oh, yes. So I put everything in the dinghy. So I said, okay, we can take the dinghy and tuck the dinghy close to the road because maybe people from the airbase will come to me because I'm very close. But I'm still having a look on the farm, you know, never knew. And he asked me to have a picture. I said, I can take a picture from you. I said, yes, okay, you can. But my mind is not there. So I said, okay, took the picture. And at the same time, the ambulance arrived with the doctor from the airbase, nurse, and everyone from the medical section of the airbase. So getting me back to the base and having all the checks, you know, scan of your body and everything just to see if everything is okay. All the organs or bones are okay everywhere. That take times. And at the end of those, I went back to the squadron to meet my colleagues, you know, the other student pilots and instructors. And actually, I realized that they thought that I was not alive because everything they didn't see, even if they could watch far and could see the airplane, they didn't see the seat ejected from the airplane.
Yeah, so they didn't know if you made it out alive.
No, so everybody was happy, and me too, but I having some pain in the back and the leg. I requested to the doctor to not, when they pick me up close to the crash position, I just told them don't advise my wife and my daughter because she has only almost 3 years old. So I don't want to, everything okay with me. So I don't want to alert anyone and take the car and come to see what's happening and you can face other problems. So anyway, at the end of the day, I call at home to say, okay, something happened to me, but everything is okay. But she was trying to understand what I was saying. I said, this is what happened. It's the same time I had my daughter in front of the TV and saying to my mom, oh, this is dad. Actually, the guys who took the picture sent it to the local TV news. And they saw me on the TV. And so everybody was stressed with this. But anyway, at the end of the day, everything finished at home. Or I think all of them were there. They come to support me after this moment. So we stay awake up to 5 morning, I think, something like this.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know more about the aftermath of the ejection. Sort of how long did it take you to fly again? Were you scared to get back in the cockpit? What things changed for you?
The day after I went back to the squadron, I was already bad. I could not walk properly with a pain in my leg, in my back. And I arrived at the squadron, was in the stairs. And the wing commander was at the top of the stairs. I said, hey, Max, is it this time you're arriving? I say, oh, I'm sorry, but I'm not very well today. He told me, hey, you have to jump up in an airplane. You're flying today. I said, no, I can't. I can't today. Ah, he's telling me, yes, he's like a horse.
And you, get back on.
Exactly. I said, no, I can't. But I know this guy, very, very, very good guy anyway. He knew that he just tried to, like all of my colleagues, it just tried to get me up and motivated, you see. No release. So I didn't fly. I flew 1 week afterwards. Yeah. And what's amazing is 1 week afterwards I flew, but when I flew, the first flight I made was very funny because I made a flight with a very experienced guy on this airplane. And we make a normal flight, even if I was afraid, really. I was afraid for 6 months after that. We made a very beautiful flight. And at landing, we both released our parachute at landing. That was wonderful. So this is things to motivate me, you see. And I were very well surrounded by my colleague and friends. I had a very good friend of mine, Jack Plasser. This guy was close to me every, I would not say every minutes, but very often to see if everything is okay. And I was very afraid flying the airplane. You know, this is like when you do something and you are afraid, but you take over that. And you need to try. It's like any kind of exercise. You try. You know you will fail, but you have to keep going and try. So this is what I did. And even if I could hear all the sound on the airplane, I could follow and listening all the noise. And okay, this is this valve over there. Okay, this is the fuel transfer starting there. All noises. And after 6 months, things started to be more cool and comfortable because I was, I think, more comfortable with the airplane in general. So everything was okay. And after the ejections, this is like a second life, you see. I have this chance to have a second life. So I know what is it when you are almost dying.
Yeah.
And one day I was with my family in the car and I stopped at the red traffic light. When the light turned green, I could not stop. I was blocked. I was blocked and they said, hey, Dan, it's okay. We can go. I said, I can't. This is like I did not know where I am or things happen like this. That's happened once. You just want to say thank you to those guys working on the seats, all the engineers, because they are saving lives.
And you got a chance to do that, right?
Yeah,
to
meet them. I got a chance to do that. Actually, we organized that with one of my good friends. He's general today. He's retired anyway. But Richie, the warning, Richard Reboul, we organized something because he ejected after takeoff. It's a kind of quite similar like me, but after takeoff. So we organized that with the ejected pilot and with all the pilot as well, the engineers. And we went to Martin Baker in north of Paris to say thank you. To say thank you to those guys because they save lives. They really save lives. Today, I think they save something around 7,600 or 500 more lives. I had the number 499 in France, but I have the number 4,394.
So in the world.
Just in 1991, to just imagine in 2023 today, how many lives they save. I think that's so anyway. This is my experience.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing it with all of us. Thank you for being our radar of the day. And we'll see you soon for a new episode of Radar.